Good evening. Lovely to see some faces I haven't seen in quite some time. And some new faces, welcome. Those of you who are new to us. This is the first of the 2014 Dharma Talk series that we do here at the Village Zendo. We give talks on Thursday nights and Sunday mornings. And on the days in between, we actually meditate. And there's people that come in the mornings, kind of a regular group of people that show up 7:30 in the morning here. And then there's a whole different group of people that show up here at 12:30 to 1:30, kind of midday sitters. And then there's the evening sits that happen either at 6:30 on Monday and Wednesday and 5:30 on Tuesday and Thursday. So I encourage you to kind of also, I love that we have a time to give talks, and but of course they have to be held up by a practice, a meditation practice. So I encourage you to come to some of our just ordinary meditation practice times also. And, you know, at this time in our society, we tend to think that the only way to learn something is to hear somebody talk about it or see a video about it or read something about it. Somehow linguistic and visual signs are what we think is the way to take in information. And yet, we might feel that something is missing when that's the only way we take in information. We think about it. The linguistic signs, the words, are just pointers. And they can numb us or send us off track. When we concretize around a metaphor like happiness or enlightenment, you know, we can separate from the energy of that very thing we seek. We can make it, as we do say in sign language, he isn't here tonight, ocean isn't here, but the unattainable, the sign for unattainable in when we're chanting is something up here and something down here that can never get up there, right? And when we chant the four vows, And there's a kind of quality of all the talk about mindfulness and meditation and enlightenment that separates us from it, from the juice, from the real thing that's there. And of course, that's not a new idea. And it's not a new idea for Zen. You've heard that old phrase, the finger pointing at the moon, and everyone begins to worship the finger. So, why am I saying this tonight? Because our study text for this 90-day intensive period that we've just begun is the Diamond Sutra. And during the Diamond Sutra, during the year-end retreat that we just completed, there were six wonderful foundational talks on the Diamond Sutra. And I encourage you to download them either from our website or from iTunes and listen to those. They were just extraordinary, exemplary talks by the teachers from the Zendo on the Diamond Sutra. And each person that spoke about the Diamond Sutra did not make it a dry thing, but it was about our lives. our very lives and how by taking in the teachings of the Diamond Sutra, it can change the way we understand our lives and experience ourselves. So I encourage you to look at that. So that's the text that we'll be talking about for the next period of time. Our intensives are 90 days long, and so we're now into the second or third week of that 90-day period. You can find the sutra on our website. You can download it from our website. It takes about a half an hour to read. I encourage you to do that. Maybe make a practice of reading it every day or so. Really let it come in, because it is a foundational text of Zen. It's important. It's a guess. And it may only take 30 minutes to read, but it takes a little longer to actualize the teachings there, to really get it in our being, so that we can begin to act with wisdom, to begin to experience our lives and our interactions with others in a wise way and not in an egocentric, selfish way. So just to review real fast, the very beginning of the sutra, the Buddha gets up and in the morning and gets his bowl and walks into town and begs for food and gets the food and walks back to the center where they're the area where they're staying, and eats his food and washes up and sits down and begins to interact with Subhuti, one of his one of the most famous what we call arhats, or wise people of the early Buddhist teachings. So Subhuti asks him, how should a bodhisattva proceed? How should a bodhisattva control her mind? So how should we be? What should we do? How should we act? And Shakyamuni replies that a bodhisattva should have the intention to liberate all living beings, and yet should not think of them as living beings, should not attach to the concept of another that might be liberated. And in one of the key ways that the sutra over and over again says this, it says it like this: if Subhuti, the idea of a living being, occurs to a bodhisattva, he should not be called a bodhisattva. Why is that? Subhuti, anybody to whom the idea of a living being occurs, or the idea of a soul, or the idea of a person occurs, should not be called a bodhisattva. So that's very powerful. You know, we all want to be awakening beings and to be of use to the world and save others. And he says right off at the top, the idea of a living being, the idea of a living being occurs to a bodhisattva, she should not be called a bodhisattva. And so, what is going on here throughout the sutra? This idea of fixing on the idea of a person, fixing on the idea of a thing, attaching to any fixed notion, any fixed object, is flawed. The idea that this is a holy stick that only a Zen master can carry, you know, but it can be a prop, it can be a hat maybe, kind of weird hat. Hello. Right? Works pretty well to stir tea. So it's not just one thing. So that's one of the aspects of what this sutra is talking about, is don't get hung up Don't get hung up on a certain kind of person or what they are. And there's so many things. We are so many things, and we're changing all the time. We are really an ingredient in a universe that's flowing in and out of us at all the time. We're not this fixed thing. And the other is not some fixed other. And that's what the sutra is trying to tell us. You know, this, we try to organize our lives so we don't recognize that the whole reality is constantly churning and changing all around us. We're part of this vast universe that's just moving through space. We think we're fixed. This is me. My name is Pat O'Hara. You know? What is that? It's a kind of strange idea we have. You know, just as we're sitting here, these cells are falling off our body, sloughing off. They do all the time. If we sat here long enough, we'd get up and that body that we thought we were would be like in a pile on the cushion. It's kind of disgusting in a way, but true. You must challenge that idea of the solid self or the solid other. You know, when we consider the immensity of time, our own little lives are like a firefly just shining for a moment in the night, in the vastness that there is. The key is, how can we accept the phenomenal world, the world around us? Oh, this cup of tea. How can we accept this? Which is much better than the idea of a cup of tea. And yet experience it as non-dual. How can we except that, there is a phenomenal world. There is a clock there ticking, telling me what time to end this talk. And at the same time, it's non-dual. There's no separation. Can you see it just for a moment? If you could experience this room as not as this kind of fixed thing with these bodies in it, but just this flowing of vibrations that it also is. Which some other kind of being could see that we can't see. If you ever read any of the other sutras, the Diamond Sutra is very clear and plain, but you read some of the other sutras, like the Vimalakirti Sutra, which talks about lands that are made of scents, of smells. The idea that there would be beings that could only see that quality of life rather than what we see. It's what we think of as the solid self. Because this is all sounds really heady, but it really makes a difference in how we experience our lives and how we are with other beings. When we create an object that's separate from us, that's separate from all dharmas, we create this duality that's false. So the sutra goes on and tells us this in many different ways to teach us the contingency of everything. Everything depends on everything else. And to see this is wisdom. even a glimpse changes everything. Even a glimpse of it, which is why we practice. Why we sit, particularly sit shikantaza, just sitting without any kind of object, and breathing in and breathing out, and simply being present to everything that is there, is the way we open ourselves to glimpse this great non-duality that will give us wisdom. And it teaches us to drop our attachment to our idea of other people, of other things, of our own life. And we begin to see our life as a relationship, not as a thing. So, in the next section of this, that was the very beginning section. The next section, the sutra instructs us how this kind of wisdom can liberate us as we are liberating others through the act of giving, dana. So the idea of generosity or dana or giving is the first of the great Buddhist virtues, the paramitas. And the reason it's the first one is because it, out of it, all the others arise. So he says, the sutra says, a bodhisattva should not give a gift while fixing on an object. He should not give a gift while fixing on anything. He should not give a gift while fixing on physical forms. He should not give a gift while fixing on sounds, smells, tastes, or objects of touch or on dharmas. For this is the way, Sabuddhi, a bodhisattva should give a gift, so that he does not fix on the idea of the distinctive features of any object. Why is that? Sabuddhi, is not easy to take the measure of the quantity of merit, Sabuddhi, of the bodhisattva who gives a gift without fixation. So I read the whole section because I just wanted you to hear this repetition of fixing, fixation, fixed. I mean, it's just, you can hear this kind of underlining of the notion of being stuck on an idea, on a gesture, on a thought, stickiness of attachment, which is so different from flow, from kinesis, from action, from dance. I see our choreographer here. From dance, from the flow of life. What stops that? That attachment, fixing. Maybe you've given something to somebody once when you've just done it spontaneously without being attached to the idea, because certainly most of the time we give something. I am giving something to you. We've just been through this period when we've done that, and the reverse of that is, I'm sure you've also experienced when you've just given something, you've just given it without any kind of attachment to the idea that you're giving, or to the thing that's given, or to the person you're giving to. So, in the Buddhist text, they're talking about merit, but we might talk about getting a gratitude from someone else, or a favor from someone else, if we were to give it to them. But you know, there is a great pleasure in opening the door for a grumpy old lady who will never give you a smile. Or dropping a dollar in a homeless man's cup when he's sleeping and he doesn't have to look up and say thank you. Well, that feels good to do that. It's unattached. It doesn't have It doesn't require the transaction. It doesn't turn the gift into a transaction. Maybe picking up some trash on the street when no one's looking to approve of it. You know, Dogen, our great Zen teacher from Japan, talked about giving in this way. It's one of my favorite phrases. If you study giving closely, you see that to accept a body and to give up the body are both giving. Making a living and producing things can be nothing other than giving. To leave flowers to wind, to leave birds to the seasons, are also acts of giving. So Dogen is saying, to be born is giving. To accept a body is to be born. And to give up the body is giving. To die is also an act of giving. Giving back the body to the whole. It's a very different way of looking at life and death. And then he says, making a living and producing things can be nothing other than giving. So what most of us do, we work. That's giving, when we're just fully in it. Washing dishes is giving. Even letting the flowers, the blossoms, be caught by the wind is giving. If your mind and heart are in the right place, that's giving. So the sutra is telling us, don't attach. Don't be like a blossom that's holding on to the branch. The wind comes. The blossom moves on. Don't attach, and when you don't attach, there is nothing that you do that is not giving. And so too with our intention to liberate ourselves and others without attaching to the action, we naturally are liberating, give liberation. So I encourage you to really consider this seriously. It's not an abstract idea. It's to consider the notion, consider in your own practice, non-attachment. Encourage yourself to feel the flow of giving and receiving. Practice Zazen without trying to get something. What would that be like? Show up at the Zendo. Show up at work. Show up in your relationship without expecting an outcome, without attachment, without praise. Just show up. What would that be like? You know, it's easy to say, but it's very challenging, actually. And I'm just trying to raise your consciousness about it so that you can catch yourself from time to time. You can't, I'm really attached to getting that, getting this. And each time you notice it, that's liberation. As long as you don't attach to the noticing of it, and then, start beating yourself up or the other person up that you witnessed this about. But just notice, and appreciate that liberation. Because when you do that, then it'll happen more. It's just like that. That's why we sit Zazen. That's why we sit and let our our breath come in and out, the thoughts come in and out, the sounds go in and out, and we become more wise, more clear, because we're not holding on to anything. Of course, most of us are holding on all the time, and the thoughts are there, blah, 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 and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, or whatever your style of thinking is. And then you notice it. It's a breath of wisdom. So, here's one thing you could do that you won't get any thanks for. On Saturday afternoon, a few people are showing up here at the Zendo to finish making the cage comforters for the pets that are adopted in the Mayor's Alliance for New York City Animals. During Sashin, we made a whole lot of cage comforters, but we didn't finish them. We have to put the batting inside. And then they're put inside the cages of these animals that are up for adoption. And they're like comfy little comforters. And also they make the animals look more attractive to people who come by. So we have a bunch of those to finish. And so it just requires that you come and sit down and sew the cotton batting closed into the things. So, what I just mean is I doubt that the animals are going to thank you, or even that the Mayor's Alliance for New York City Animals are going to thank you. And so that could be like your first exercise in non-attached giving. So let me end with a gatha here. And I encourage you to read section 4 of the Diamond Sutra. What is giving? Eyes willing to meet, hands to touch. No matter how different we are, eyeball to eyeball. Allowing the snow to fall, the tears to fall, all.